This podcast is intended for investment professionals. Welcome back to Elgium Talks and our series In Conversation With. I'm your host, Mark Chappell, and today my guest is senior European economist, Hetal Mehta. Hetal, thanks so much for being here on the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're going to dive right into your career, your life, your hobbies. I hope you're ready for this.
Yep, go on.
So you joined Elgium 8 years ago to be a senior European economist. How would you define your role and how has it changed over time?
So in its most flippant way, I normally describe my job as being paid to make up numbers.
That's amazing. I wish we could all do that.
Yeah. Obviously, there is a little bit more science to it. But it is, to a large extent, it's analysing data, making an assessment of where that is taking the economy. So looking at what's happened and then what's going to happen. And then obviously working with the strategists in terms of what it means for markets and seeing those views implemented in our portfolios.
So there's a tangibility element there of kind of your work as an economist finding its way into actual client outcomes in that sense.
Yeah, very much so. And that's really what appeals about working on the buy side, and particularly in Elgium, where you know we have a huge array of funds, we have different strategists with different specialisms. So your views can really be, as an economist, your views can be taken and applied to lots of different asset classes. And that's really what appeals. I mean, in the past, I've worked for an economic consultancy or even in the civil service where you do research, it gets pushed out to clients or you know ministers, but you don't really know what's being done on the back of that. Whereas it feels that you know it's a much more tangible relationship you have with your views and the kind of final outcome.
I think that's really interesting. I mean, I know that when at school, perhaps, the choice between physics and economics was decided by a coin toss, you mentioned. I mean, is it that tangibility? What flipped that coin in the direction of economics for you?
So for me, it's always been, I've always enjoyed maths. Actually, one of the things I liked about it was you're either right or you're wrong. But I wanted to apply it to something. And so there was the option of physics. In all honesty, I couldn't see myself sitting in a lab. And when you're making these decisions at the age of 16 or 17, you're not the most informed. But I just couldn't see myself doing that. And with economics, I thought it would be more applicable. The interest in the world around me was really what appealed. So almost maths with results is the way I'd look at it.
So taking that forward, you studied economics at university and then that introduced you to the world of the civil service, investment banking, I think you said, and consultancy. Like that's a really fascinating career of taking economics through all of these different areas. What would that experience kind of show you about, you know, how economics can be applied? And also, how have your working changed in that time?
So you see both the good side and the bad side of
being
an economist. So in the civil service, particularly when you're quite junior, you know there is that element of you're doing work, but you know that ultimately your research or your recommendations are going to be taken and manipulated isn't quite the right phrase, but it's that they will be used as justification or
support
not
a point of view.
Yeah, exactly. And if it doesn't support a point of view, then it could be easily disregarded. And so that's something that can be quite demoralising from a kind of intellectual capacity perspective. But then, you know, you get into the world where then you're working, you know, on client projects in consultancy. That takes you another step closer again to those final outcomes, but not quite there. And then similarly on the investment banking side, you're a bit closer to markets rather than kind of working in this more academic type bubble. But it's still not quite at that kind of forefront of, you know, what are the final outcomes of what people are doing with your research or your views. And so it, for me, it's been a kind of deliberate, each move has been to try and take me closer to having something that you can, at the end of the day, say, my view led to XYZ. And that's really what, as an economist, I think, we all kind of look for that kind of validation, the research and the effort and cranking all of those models, or whether it's, you know, trying to interpret central banks, every comma and semicolon that they put in their central bank statements and minutes kind of pays off because, you know, you can actually see that At the end of the day, someone actually believes your view and is willing to put their money where your mouth is.
Absolutely. It goes back to that, as you were describing maths as being there's right and there's wrong, but also there's this portfolio of work where you can say, well, these are the times that I was right, and here's the positive benefit that that had. How would you describe the way that you've done economics, the way that you've approached economics has changed? I mean, of course, the field has changed so much over the last 10, 20 years. How has that influenced your work in that sense?
So I guess over the last few years, the things that have changed the most for economists, particularly, you know, if you're focused on Europe, but not just exclusively Europe, is it's not just about the economics. It's not just about looking at data and previous relationships, holding and making assumptions on what that will do to GDP growth. It's a lot more about the wider context, particularly the political background. So in Europe, we had the Greek crisis, Eurozone breakup risk. In the UK, it's Brexit. I have read constitutions, like the Spanish constitution and the Italian constitution and the Greek constitution, which is not something I ever expected to do
as an economist.
As an economist, but you have to, in order to understand what the constraints are on policy, and what that might mean for the direction of travel, you have to be more well-versed and look outside of just pure economics. And of course, then there's a huge amount of data that we have to digest. Before, you waited for statistical releases, you waited for the official data, and now we have so much more. We have big data, we have things that look at online prices on a kind of live second-by-second basis. We have things that track, vehicle traffic and all those other supplementary indicators which, you know, people didn't look at before, but they're all there now and they can all be used and manipulated. It's kind of, in some ways, it's sieving out the important information from a huge amount of data.
Yeah, shifting the signal for the noise in that sense of the sheer weight of data and indicators that are available to you now. And yet, which ones matter? And I think that's where I imagine you and the team, I mean, you're not the only economist at LGM. Like, it must be nice to have a team of economists with you, being able to be to have that kind of that discussion about what is it that really moves the dial? What is it that matters to your economic views?
Yeah, it's great to have other economists to bounce ideas off. There's the usual cliche of put two economists in a room and you end up with three opinions. So when there's five of you, you can just imagine what that's like. Healthy debate is really what helps. So diversity of thought is something that we as a team value. Open, respectful challenge. As I said, throwing ideas around. Someone might have seen something new that could apply from emerging market economies to Europe or the UK, and it's just that idea sharing which is really, really useful.
Looking ahead, how do you think this explosion of data indicators is obviously going to continue? It feels like there's only going to ever be more data in the world. In what other ways do you feel like your job as an economist is going to evolve in, say, how's it going to look different in, say, 5 years?
So I think there is possibly a danger or maybe even an opportunity that economists will have to become better programmers, better at distilling that information. But at the end of the day, we know that, there's AI, there's a lot of technology out there that can do things for you. And it's the crux of being an economist is still, I guess, the human touch, what the brain can process that a machine can't. I wouldn't say that we all rely on intuition alone, but that I think it's understanding when you have to rely on intuition and using the kind of distilled data as your cross-check.
Would you say that's also the change you're most looking forward to, or is there something else that that's coming around the corner and you think that the tech or the information just isn't quite there yet, but when it is, This is going to really kind of change your work, your job, your role for the better?
I think change is always a good thing. learning new skills mm-hmm. keeps everyone cognitively quite fresh. That's something we should all be open to. As economists, you know, the very nature of the traditional economist's job was to take data about the past, mm-hmm. put it into a statistical model to try and tell you something about the future. Now, every recession, every crisis, or every growth period we have as well, every economic cycle is a bit different. And our tools and our processes have to adapt along with that. And that's quite, again, intellectually quite stimulating.
To turn this conversation perhaps over to interests outside economics, and feel like we could carry on talking about economics for the rest of the day while the sun's still up.
Well, it's an occupational hazard being an economist, I can tell you.
So if you weren't an economist at all, what would be the dream job? What would you be doing if not senior European economist at Legal & General Investment Management?
So I quite like taking photos, mm-hmm. particularly of flowers.
Flowers in particular.
So I toyed with the idea of whether I'd make a good florist mm-hmm. or not. And then I thought, well, I'm not sure about that.
It's very, very early morning hours.
It is,
that would be the death of me.
Yeah. But actually, I think combining my love of photography and mm-hmm. just looking at flowers. So I guess something along those lines.
That's really interesting. How long have you been interested in photography? Where did this come from?
I think it's just something that I saw my dad do a lot when I was younger, taking lots of photos, mm-hmm. Just like playing around with composition, shapes, geometry. It goes back to my love of maths.
Yeah, it all comes back to
yeah,
that maths.
Exactly. So it's just something about composition, and it's not black and white, and certainly not black and white photos alone either. But it's just something about, you know, again, every flower is different. You can you can picture it from lots of different angles, and I just quite enjoy that aspect of it.
And lastly, I'd just like to talk about travel. So you recently came back from Japan in the last year. What was that like? What drew you to Japan?
So I think it was, for me, two things. One, a completely different culture to the one that I'm used to. I mean, I have Indian heritage, so I've been to India a lot. Obviously, lived in the UK all my life and travelled around Europe extensively. So it was a culture that was completely different from the two that I'm very familiar with. And then on top of that, my husband speaks Japanese fluently. He lived out there for a couple of years. And it was just somewhere that I wanted to kind of see him in his element, but experience a completely different environment. And it was fascinating. And then, you know, as I said, being an economist is an occupational hazard. There was a part of me that wanted to see what, you know, a highly developed country with persistently low inflation looks like. Are we seeing deflation? Are we seeing a country that is, you know, feeling depressed? And that was not the case at all. It was, you know, people seemed relatively content, and yeah, they've clearly reached a point in their economic development where they are comfortable with.
We're very happy with it. It's so interesting that even while on holiday, you're still applying that economist lens to your surroundings. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Hethel.
Thanks, Mark.
Absolutely a pleasure. And thank you very much for listening. Be sure to listen again next week for more ELGIM Talks and more In Conversation With in coming months. Thank you very much. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in Legal & General investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.